is it real or is it fake? You can always count on the real thing, R-E-E-L, on morelikeradio.com. My name is Mark Nixon. Chris Wetton, how are you?
Hey, baby.
Hey, it is October 11th, 2016. We finally decided to get off our asses and do a show, and so...
It's only been 2 weeks.
Only 2 weeks. Yeah. And honestly, we kind of need to accumulate the time in between when we last did a show to this point in order to get, you know, like some good meat and
everything. We're kind of in the dead zone after summer, not quite into the award season movies yet.
Correct.
So, you know,
correct.
It's a good time for take a week or two off.
So we appreciate your patronage. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. We are The Real Thing, R-E-E-L-T-H-I-N-G-M-L-R.
Thank you very much.
As always, on morelikeradio.com. Since we missed 2 weeks, let's... briefly go over
2 weeks.
Let's briefly go over the numbers for the weekend of September 30th, which, surprising to me, I was thinking that Deepwater Horizon was going to be number one, and it actually wasn't. It was Miss Pellegrin's Home for Peculiar Children.
Oh,
yeah, and
that is surprising.
28 million.
God damn. Yeah. But it's like teen friendly and stuff, right? Wasn't this a book? I feel like this was like a series of books.
Yeah, it's like a young adult book. It's got Eva Green.
Toss in Tim Burton and like young adult book, and that's good for 20 million right there.
Yeah. That was number one. Deepwater Horizon was number two.
Deepwater Horizon also, I feel like people think like movies like that, sometimes it's like, it's kind of a bummer, you know? Like we just all saw Sully, and it's like, I've seen one serious disaster movie for the year.
Yeah, but I would think that people would want to watch something like that, especially in like the rah-rah, like an American rah-rah film.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. It's like, yeah, this was like, but this is not rah-rah. This is kind of like, oh, fuck, America, what'd you do?
Like stand together against, the BP oil disaster that happened.
Bad guys. Malkovich is playing like a Cajun bad guy and all this kind of stuff.
Is he really?
Yeah, he plays Cajun. Jesus. Like, yeah, not bad guy, but like, oil man. That's one of the things the reviews all said about the movies. There's no bad guys. It's all gray characters, you know, that kind of. But he plays the guy that's like, you know, we got to get in there and dig for the oil and all this kind of stuff. It feels like homework. This movie feels like homework.
Okay.
I want to see it, but it's like, meh. Do I want to go to the theater and see it?
Okay. So
that's the question that's popping up more and more these days. It's like, I want to see it. Do I want to see it in the theater? That's a bigger question than it used to be.
Deepwater Horizon?
Any movie.
Miss Pellegrin's?
All movies these days, plenty of movies come out that I'm like, yeah, I want to see it. I'm not going to go see it in the theater. Back in the day, I would have gone to see it in the theater. And now it's like, I want to see Deepwater. Yeah, that's going to be the porno.
Deepwater Horizon.
Deepwater Horizon.
Azkaban?
The Prisoner of Azkaban. Hairless Potter. I want to see it. But I'll see it when it's on, you know, Redbox, or I'll see it when it's on Netflix, or I'll see it, you know, some other time. But I'm not going to pay $15 or whatever it is and go see it at the theater.
How about this past weekend? Would you pay to go see The Girl on the Train?
I would. I did not read the book. My wife did. I'm sort of marginally interested in it, mostly because I'm supremely attracted to Emily Blunt. Yes. And I also think she's a great actress. And
she's a very good actress.
All the reviews did not get great reviews. It got like a 45% rating on Rotten Tomatoes or something like that.
From what I don't know, they were comparing this release to Gone Girl, which got released, you know, a couple of years ago.
Well, the books have a lot in common, which is they were both, like, you know, huge, like, summer book hits, like, thriller books that everybody was reading. Everybody and their mother literally was reading it.
Yeah, but I guess this movie did not do the book justice as far as translating. It was kind of a snore fest. I haven't seen it, but I was reading what the majority of the reviews were talking about. And in spite of that, it made $24 million, which is okay, I guess, for an October release.
Yeah, but they wanted more. They wanted Gone Girl money. They wanted Girl with the Dragon Tattoo money. And you're right. All the reviews sort of say, Emily Blunt is fantastic. The movie doesn't quite live up to the book.
Birth of a Nation, just for, you know, fodder, came in sixth. $7
million? Boy, man, poor Nate Parker.
Poor Nate Parker?
Poor Nate. Well, first of all, he was acquitted.
Right.
Let's get that out there first of all. So Birth of a Nation is directed by a guy named Nate Parker, who, you know, the movie was like had all the buzz coming out of Cannes or wherever it was, Sundance.
Yeah.
It was like, this is going to be the number one movie of the award season. It's probably going to win Best Picture. It's about like a slave uprising, like Civil War era. And then the press sort of like dredged up this story about Nate Parker, the writer, director, and star of the movie, that he had been, along with another person, accused of rape many years ago.
Correct.
And he was acquitted. The other guy, well, I think, was found guilty or something like that. Either way, rape story in the past.
Right.
And that has severely damaged the reputation of this movie and I think the release of the movie. It probably would have gotten a much bigger marketing push had that not been dredged up.
Well, it also came back because apparently the alleged victim of that particular incident killed themselves.
Oh, damn.
Like 2012, 2011, from my recollection.
Slap that on the poster.
Yeah, and I know that it had high hopes from, you know, all the Sundance accolades and everything else, but apparently it only made $7 million. It played in, what, 2,100 theaters? And so...
pretty wide release.
Yeah.
A bummer. Like, who wants to go see... Like, you know, historical rapes aside, who wants to go see this, you know, like, slave drama? Like, honestly, back to the same question we posed a minute ago.
Okay.
I would like to see it. Do I want to go pay $10, $15, and go see it at the movie theater?
Okay, let me give you the top five. Top five from last weekend. Girl on the Train, would you see it, kind of, sort of?
Yeah, would see it, not going to go to the theater.
Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, would you go see that in the movie theater?
No. I live in a home for peculiar children.
Yeah. Deepwater Horizon, would you go pay money, cash money to see that?
Of all those three that you just named, if I were going to go pay to see one, it would probably be Deepwater Horizon.
Magnificent Seven? And you did see that in the theater.
I did see Magnificent Seven.
Yeah. And so, Storks. Well, Storks you have to watch because...
I probably will. It's probably... I don't really think I've gone this long without seeing a kid's movie that's been in the theater since my kids were like 3 years old. Like, I have not seen this, and that's... Usually a kid's movie comes out and we're there like opening day. I'm like, come on, let's go. You know, like, this is something to do with the kids.
Well, I'm glad that you brought up the whole point about how everyone's been a little bit more selective when it comes to, you know, actually going to the theater and, you know, paying now $15, $20. Like before it was, you know, under $10 if you, you know, finagle your matinee times and you're going on a Sunday afternoon and all that type of thing. But honestly, Chris, you really don't have to go outside of your house in order to really enjoy, like, good, you know, quality. Not even, you know, like, hey, I'm going to watch this television show or I'm going to watch this on Netflix or anything else. Like, this is stuff that's actually comparable, if not better, in my opinion. And I know that you probably feel the same way about when it comes to the movie releases and what's being released on HBO and Cinemax and Netflix. And what I would like to move into is Westworld.
I'd like to move into Westworld too.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, you know what? Let's set the premise because I'm sure that everyone's been hearing about the hype. It's a television series on HBO. It was created by Jonathan Nolan of Christopher Nolan, his brother, and Lisa Joy. I have no idea what she's done, but it's based on the film that was released in 1973, directed and written by Michael Crichton from way, way back. And it's produced by J.J. Abrams. And it takes place in this fictional, I want to say, Red Dead Redemption world. Just an open world where you can pay top dollar and be a cowboy. And there are androids there to make whatever cowboy fantasy you want to see happen.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, but you bring up a good point. And I actually have it written down right here. Would you do this? Would you do Westworld?
Would I, like, if I had the money, would I go to, like, a sort of virtual reality? It's not virtual reality, first of all.
No.
So, like, when I saw the previews for it, I sort of thought, well, they're going to do the 2016 version of the old movie, which is, like, you know, you're laying in a cryo tube somewhere, and you fall asleep, and you wake up in Westworld or whatever. It's not what it is.
Yeah, you're like...
They literally get on a train and are shipped into this giant... Eventually, I guess we're going to get a glimpse of this... magnificent warehouse that's like, you know, like 500 square miles or something.
Man, I don't know. I have so many questions now.
Yeah, there's a million questions after watching this.
And that was just the first episode. And then I saw the second episode. It's really weird, too, because you would think that from the first episode where they were talking about how, you know, we're going to move into this new program and this new narrative, and there's, you know, two different sides. There's the actual Western environment where, you know, you've got people like Evan Rachel Wood and you've got,
right,
God, Ed Harris, by the way.
They're droids that can be programmed to play a certain part. Like, they Correct. Even get into it. Like, one droid, they're like, you know, he's been there for a million years. And like, what have we had him do before? Where they're like, well, now he's the rancher. For several years, he was the sheriff. A couple years before that, he was the bartender. You just program this droid, and that's what he's going to be for a couple. And by the way, Ed Harris, first of all, I thought he was a droid. You're watching the show, it's very confusing.
Yeah. But in a good way.
In a good way, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's tremendously well done. I mean, it's really, hats off to HBO for dipping their toes into the fantasy sci-fi realm. They've never done anything like this before.
Man, they're all in on this too, because it's crazy expensive looking.
Totally kidding, yeah. Like, it's like the companion piece to Game of Thrones.
Right,
like,
right.
They put out a lot of new shows, and a lot of times it's like something that, you know, The Night Of or Divorce, something that seems like maybe it's from good writer-directors and it's got an interesting premise, but it doesn't. It's not on the production value level of something like Game of Thrones.
Right.
This is on the production value level of Game of Thrones.
Or, for example, recent example, Vinyl.
Yeah.
There was a lot of money pumped into that show, and they really tried to sell it hard when it came to, you know, pushing it and making it appealing
but
and having
it sort of niche. No matter how much they push it, it's a little bit niche. Even I never gave it a chance, not because I didn't want to, just because you sort of have to be in the right mood and, you know, kind of rub me the right way, and then maybe I'll watch it. This is like, it's like an event. Everybody was sort of interested in watching it.
Yeah, I'll be very frank that as far as Vinyl was concerned, I really didn't get into it until like the fourth or fifth episode. When I started watching Westworld, I was like 30 minutes in. I'm like, man, this is really good. And Tina's losing her mind. She's like, we've got to watch the second episode. And they actually released it early because they didn't want to compete with the second presidential debate this past Sunday, and New York Comic Con was happening, so they said, you know, fuck it, we'll just release it on Friday. But, I mean, it's got a slew of people. It's got Anthony Hopkins, it's got Ed Harris, it's got Jeffrey Wright, it's got Evan Rachel Wood, Tandy Newton, Jimmy Simpson.
It grabs you right away. It really does. It's interesting from the first episode. And like we were talking about movies a little while ago, you sort of have to judge which movies you're going to go to the theater and see. TV has a similar problem, which is what you were just talking about. Vinyl doesn't catch you to the fourth or fifth episode. But shit, I'm out by that point, typically. Right. You know what I mean? Like, something doesn't catch me by episode two or three, I am fucking out of there. It's got to be Narcos or Westworld or The Night Of. It's got to catch me from the first episode or I simply won't. There's too much good TV out there.
Yeah.
Right now, I've got like eight shows that everyone is up my ass that I have to watch. And I just don't have the time.
I'm like, one of those people that are up your ass.
Yeah. You're like up my ass all the time. Like, well, you got to watch this, you got to watch that. And you're always right. Most of the time, you're right.
Oh, most of the time, I'm right.
This one, I was interested in from literally, like, scene one.
Yeah.
And I won't say that it's perfect, because we've only seen two episodes of it. But it is supremely intriguing at this point.
What are some of the better parts of this show that you would recommend to somebody that has absolutely no idea what we're talking about?
What's interesting about it is they sort of flip it on its head from the old movie Westworld, which is, oh, the droids are going crazy and they're killing people.
Yeah.
That's possibly a threat. We might get to something like that. But what is more seemingly a threat in this world is the humans that are going into the park.
Yeah.
And some of their motives and some of their instincts. And it also has a lot of interesting already questions raised about what it's like to be someone who creates these droids, which are so human and so and have, for lack of a better word, sort of a consciousness and might even becoming sentient. So it's like really exposing some interesting questions about those on those avenues. But also, just from a production value, it's freaking gorgeous. The effects that they've shown already are really cool. The second episode, did you watch the second episode?
Yes.
So the second episode actually gets... First one is a lot of introduction and a little bit of action and things like that. Second one has some tension and, you know, some real suspense.
Yeah, and it comes from a different angle where you're not coming from the creators and the creations, but just regular guys like you and me. Like, hey, we're going to go to Westworld.
Yeah.
And one of them's, you know, like one of those like broheme, like we're going to go fuck bitches and shoot up saloons. And the other guy's like, I'm just going to, you know, try to enjoy the experience.
You take two guys and plop them into a situation, like this, which is so unique.
Yeah.
And they're going to behave very, very differently.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's what the whole premise of the show is. You can do whatever you want in this world. There are no rules for the humans that go in there.
Right.
If you want to bang hookers all night long, you can do that. If you just want to have an experience where you meet someone and go on like a treasure hunt and it just, or if you want to take your kids into this world and have a, yeah, you know, experience where you guys are trying to settle the Old West or whatever it is. Yeah. Or if you want to be a cold-blooded murderer, and back to Ed Harris, which I think you were alluding to a minute ago, how fucking good is Ed Harris? Always, but particularly in this show, maybe it's because I haven't seen him in anything really great in a couple years.
Yeah.
He is so good on this.
He's like, it's like his character from History of Violence just decided to put on a cowboy hat and forget about Joey, and then just show up in Westworld.
His face is so, like, grizzled and, like, dried up. It's like a piece of beef jerky.
Looks like a fucking cowboy. And he looks like a fucking cowboy with that hand cannon that's in his head. Did you see that thing?
Yeah.
Like, I'm telling you, I'm not trying to quote Pulp Fiction, but it's bigger than him. It's got, like, a shotgun edition on top of the six-shooter reticle thing.
I'm pretty sure it's the cartoon gun that Eddie Valiant pulled out of the case in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
There were also like little Easter eggs, if you will, that were really, really great. I don't know if you noticed. I didn't actually notice it. First of all, Tina was talking about how hot Ed Harris was, which, you know, like, how am I going
to... My mom's always had a thing for Ed Harris.
How am I going to argue with her?
Here, let me bring a saddlebag over. You can climb on this thing. Pretty much the same thing.
Fucking guy could kill me with his look.
Nah, he is badass.
Second of all, did you notice the piano music that was playing?
Yes.
And it was playing No Surprises.
First of all, that was the second episode. Yeah. First episode, it was Black Hole Sun. And then they did
Paint It Black,
which we got to have a moratorium on Paint It Black.
Oh.
Paint It Black's one of those songs, and I like Westworld, and I love the use of the, you know, old school piano playing the modern songs. That's a really interesting touch.
Yeah.
But Paint It Black is so fucked out. Like, we got to have a moratorium on that song. It's like, especially for, like, background of, like, a killing scene and, like, very dark. Like, we get it. It's like, this is Suicide Squad level telegraphing of what you're trying to say.
Yeah, that would be a complaint. The English...
Minor complaint.
The English guy that is writing all the stories that is, you know, being very overtly like, I'm going to write whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah, it's a little much.
Yeah, a little much. But then it's balanced out by, you know, Anthony Hopkins, you know.
How good is Anthony Hopkins?
Very good.
Long time since I've seen him in anything that, you know, wasn't sort of cringy, embarrassing, you know?
Shit, everyone. Jimmy Simpson's good.
Yep.
Clifton Collins Jr.'s good. James Marsden is good.
James Marsden, of all people.
Yeah.
Evan Rachel Wood.
There were two other actors.
By the way, was Michael Wincott the old cowboy that Anthony Hopkins was talking to in the basement? That sort of had like a short circuit and laid back down? I looked through all the credits and it did not say who it was, but I swear to God, you watch it again. It looked and sounded like Michael Wincott.
Well, I caught one.
Why a spoon, cousin?
Well, because...
Why not an axe or a blade? Because it's dull, you twit!
It'll hurt more! Two actors that I caught. Stephen Ogg in episode one. Do you know who Stephen Ogg is? He is Trevor from Grand Theft Auto V.
Yeah, well, that's why I don't know him. Okay. How the hell do you know the actor from Grand Theft Auto V?
Because it looks exactly like him. Plus, you can't not recognize his voice. Oh. Maybe you should ask your dad. Because I know he plays GTA 5 all the time. He plays
it way more than I ever did.
The other actress that I figured out today, Tallulah Riley. So when Jimmy Simpson's going in...
She's the one who was, like, unbuttoning his shirt and stuff.
Right, Do you know where she's from? She was Tom Hardy's projection that he was trying to convince Cillian Murphy that
an Inception. Nice.
Basically doing the exact same thing that she's doing right now.
She's gorgeous. She is like knockout beauty.
She's about a 9.5 for sure.
Also a very good scene.
Yeah. Yeah. And
everything about it, like, it, you just can tell you're in the hands of good storytellers. You can tell that you're in the hands of people who are really paying such close attention to even the most minute details. And that's one of the things they talk about. The experience of Westworld, the actual park, is not about the story. It's not about blowing people away. People come back because of these little details. They feel like they're seeing something they've never seen before, which is very akin to like a Grand Theft Auto, one of these massive games that you can play and play and play, and you'll never play it the same way twice.
Which technically, you can follow the rules that are established in real time. You can follow all the traffic lights, you can not kill
people.
But
who does?
Yeah, come
on. Or what usually happens to people when they're playing the game, and I'm guessing this is where they're going with Westworld 2, is you start off following the rules, you start off on a mission, and then the mission goes sour, and it's like, fuck it, comes out.
Just going to start running people over with a horse and mowing people down with my
hand. See if I can get up to 5 stars here and how long I can make it last.
That's right. The cavalry's coming in. So yeah, Westworld is fucking great.
Yeah,
I'm really
into it.
I know that... Can't figure
out the titles of the... There's like, the first one was called The Original, the second one was called Chestnut. Weird titles.
Yeah, and then the third episode is called The Strain. I have no idea what that entails. I'm sure there's Jonathan Nolan has written or has worked with Chris Nolan, his brother, on Memento,
pretty much everything,
and Prestige, and The Dark Knight, and The Dark Knight Rises,
everything,
and Interstellar. Yeah. So,
yeah, I mean, they work closely together. This is his first project that is sort of his and not Jonathan Nolan's.
I'm kind of surprised about that, though. Nolan's. You would think.
Well, I mean,
you got J.J. Abrams producing, so I mean, it's kind of the same.
You're surprised that he hasn't produced, that Chris Nolan is not involved in it?
Not necessarily, because Chris Nolan continues to want to make movies, not delve into. Like, if you were not retired, but kind of scaling back as far as what he's involved in, then I can see him doing like Scorsese or Spielberg or that type of thing.
Yeah, and also you might wonder like, hey, why has Jonathan Nolan not made anything on his own before? Well, Chris Nolan's kind of been working balls to the wall for the last 15 years or so. He probably was going to go make something. He's like, yeah, I'm going to go make a little small project over here, a little art house indie movie. What are you doing? Oh, the new Batman. Have fun over there with your... Yeah, it's like, I guess I'll fucking work with my big brother again and help him out, like, do whatever he's doing. He's making a Batman movie.
How happy is Michael Crichton at this point? He's like, oh,
well, he's dead, so...
Oh, okay, well, I guess he's not
probably
happy.
Probably not very.
Well, then he can not answer to... Because, I was watching Westworld, and then my friends... The smoke alarm is going off, by the way. On the real thing, I'm more like radio.com, by the way.
Put that thing out over there.
I know. But the other thing that I was going to mention was that, so I watched Westworld, and then I was talking with my friends Sean and Ryan, and they were really into bad movies, like terrible, awful, shitty movies. And they told me, hey, you should watch Runaway. Yeah. Like, Runaway, what is this? Runaway, it's directed by Michael Crichton and written by Michael Crichton, and you just watched Westworld. You should check this out. And it was supposed to be as a goof. This was literally one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire life. It starred Tom Selleck in 1984, which would have meant that had he been selected and been able to do Indiana Jones, which was originally slated for him, he would have been starring in this movie along with Gene Simmons from Kiss. That's right. And Cynthia Rhodes, who incidentally ended up marrying the singer Richard Marx. I don't know if you ever knew that, but...
Wow. No, yeah. I did not.
And Kirstie Alley. Kirstie Alley of Cheers fame.
Right.
This
is the one with the little electronic spiders that Gene Simmons controls and sends out to kill people.
It is.
Tom Selleck's got a gun that looks like RoboCop's gun.
It is abundantly bad. It is terribly bad.
I saw this a couple times when I was a kid because my mom really liked this movie.
Really?
Yeah, but you know how fucking the 80s were weird. Like, we thought things were good movies when they actually were not good movies.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, that's how Runaway was.
Yeah, pacing and special effects and Gene Simmons, like, just with the pouting, like Donald Trump pouting, like...
Yeah.
I'm pouting on the lips right now.
Yeah.
He's
got the big asshole mouth.
This is like Mystery Science Theater 3000 worthy, just to be just ripped to shreds, which is basically what Sean and Ryan and I were doing while we were watching it last week. But
God, I got to see it again, I guess.
Yeah. When you do, I'll bring over a six-pack and we'll watch this fucking thing. Because
you should have a bad movie night.
Have a bad movie show, by the way.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just, hey, hit play right now. We're going to start watching this thing. We'll do like a laugh tracks, riff tracks kind of thing.
Yeah.
Hard ticket to Hawaii. That's the first one we got to do, I'm telling you.
All right. Then I weep for the future. As we move on the real thing on morelikeradio.com, I do also want to mention that I know that you haven't seen it, don't really have an interest in seeing it, but I've seen the first two episodes of Luke Cage.
Yeah.
The show that's currently on Netflix, it started about a week ago, and it stars Michael Coulter as the aforementioned Luke Cage, who's also known as Power Man. He gets involved in some sci-fi experiment gone wrong. He's bulletproof. Mostly derived with...
So that's his thing? He's bulletproof?
He's indestructible.
He's indestructible.
As far as I know right now, because I've only watched the first two episodes.
Okay.
But it really goes into the vein of, like, blaxploitation films and television shows, and it stars a bunch of people that, you know, you've seen before, like Mahershala Ali, the guy from House of Cards.
Yeah.
And then Alfie Woodard, who I confused with Olivia... Viola Davis.
Oh, yeah. Alfie Woodard from Scrooged.
Yes, yeah. Correct. It's okay.
It's okay?
It's all right. I mean, there's a lot of setup. I guess you don't have to watch Jessica Jones, the other show that's on Netflix with Kristen Ritter.
They're all going to be part of the Defenders. Daredevil, Jessica Jones, yeah. Luke Cage, and Iron Fist.
Yeah, now I've seen both seasons of Daredevil. Yeah. And that is good.
I saw the first one.
But I also know that it's, you know, a 10-12 hour investment in watching any of these shows. And as far as it is right now, like, it's good. I'm just, you know.
So what did you say? Two episodes?
Two episodes.
You've seen two.
Yeah.
I'm not against, you said I'm not really interested in seeing, I don't have any inherent interest in watching almost any TV show. But there's now, like I said before, there's like 8 or 9 of them that are sort of on my plate that I sort of need to, I feel like I'm,
you gotta prioritize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a checkout girl at the grocery store and the conveyor belt is just loaded with groceries and they're coming at me. And Luke Cage was just put on the very back there by the magazines. Like, I can't even think about that right now. You know? Like,
yeah. Well, it's definitely got style. It's got really good music. In fact, I think the first couple episodes they had Faith Evans and Rafael Sadiq from Tony playing live.
Good God.
Pulling
these guys from.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, it's got like a modern feel, but it's also, you know, kind of, again, you know, falling back on those, like, you know, movies like Shaft and, you know,
Foxy Brown and shit like that.
Yeah, and
Superfly.
So if you're a fan of those,
you get through it. You tell me it's awesome, I'll totally watch it. But like, I'm just a little fucked out with superhero shit right now.
Well, I think the thing that I was kind of a little not necessarily disappointed. I was like, I wish they would have, you know, because the first episode's always set up, and then the second episode is where, you know, they start like kind of showing, you know, what he can do and what he can't do.
Sure.
And you know, he's indestructible and bulletproof. Again, just to my knowledge, because I've only watched the first two episodes. But I kind of, you know, like, if you're watching a superhero movie or show, you kind of want to get to that part
immediately,
just so you can be like, "Ooh, that's good." And the end of the second episode is where the "ooh" part is about to happen, like, in real time, I think, from the trailer that they were, everybody was going nuts about. And so I'm gonna give it a chance. But so I saw that, and then, you know, again, you don't have to leave the house to go watch, you know, good shit, especially when it comes to, you know, documentaries, for example, which aren't necessarily released in the theater willy-nilly.
Nah, almost so, never these days.
Correct. And so
you get to see a Dinesh D'Souza, Hillary's America, or some shit like that.
Which,
like,
made $2 at the box office.
I think it made a lot of money.
Did it really?
Yeah, we should look it up. But Dinesh D'Souza made a, you know, one of those like ultra right wing anti Obama movies like last year, and then this year he made this ultra right wing anti Hillary movie. He's written a couple books, like, it's all, and then people go see that shit. Like, seriously, like, it was playing at our little theater here in town.
Yeah,
Hillary's America was playing for like 2 weeks. People go to see that stuff. But in general, you don't get a lot of documentaries in theaters. I didn't think what the last like major documentary release was. I mean, it had to have been like Michael Moore movie or something like that.
One that probably made money was Michael Jackson's This Is It.
Yeah, Michael Jackson's When He Died, Bill Maher's Religious.
And I apologize, Chris. I should also mention that if you're hearing another voice on The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com, that's because we've got our friend Josh. Josh, who is listening because he's going to be contributing at some point, and so you might as well just sit in the damn chair, dude, because, you know, you're gonna be talking anyway. So right. Hillary's America, The Secret History of the Democratic Party, made $13 million.
$13 million is a lot of money for a documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we both saw, or at least in part, if not entirely, Amanda Knox.
Yeah.
And honestly, I didn't know fuck all about Amanda Knox before.
I didn't either.
Yeah, before I watched this, because I know that it was a big, big story, but it was like one of those things where it's on every single news program and outlet and channel, and I'm like, I don't care, like, whatever. Yep. It's like
same way I felt about OJ as a 14-year-old.
Like, right.
Don't care enough.
But very well made.
Yeah, really engaging.
Yeah, and I guess finally in some sort of resolution, I mean, if, whoever doesn't know, just look it up on Google, because I'm not going to go explaining into it. But as far as, you know, kind of, you know, going into the investigation and, you know, allowing both sides to explain their rationale and their alibi slash, trying to figure out exactly what happened with this murder that happened in right. Italy.
A documentary like this is always better when you can get the key players from both sides. And this one has Amanda Knox and the primary investigator of the case. The guy who was there from day one when the police were called. Or the polizia, as all their jackets say on the back.
Right.
That's what makes it good. You got to have both sides. So if it was just Amanda Knox telling her side, or if it was just like a hatchet job piece from the investigator side,
yeah.
It wouldn't work.
Right. Yeah, it's, God, I hate to use the word tastefully made because, you know, it does involve somebody that died, but, You know, for what it's worth, it is very interesting. Man, I'm really getting into, like, true crime documentaries now. Like, well, I can't not watch either this or Making a Murderer or Made in America, O.J. Made in America.
We haven't talked about on here Made in America, the O.J. Simpson documentary.
We briefly touched on it because I finished it and I was telling you
you needed to watch it. You were telling me I needed to watch it. Correct. But I was like, fuck you, 10-hour documentary, fuck that.
Well, you did watch it.
I did watch it.
What'd you think?
I thought it was the best effing television that I've seen in a couple years, maybe.
Like, really?
Yeah, no. And the best documentary... I mean, first of all, calling it a documentary is a little bit unfair because it's 7 hours long.
So, right.
I mean, it's a docu-TV series. But it's 7 hours long. The thing about it that's so great is that it starts... way back before the murders. Like, right. It lays the groundwork for him as a person.
Right.
And then it gets into everything. Like, the whole race culture from way before the murders took place.
Right.
Builds up to, through his relationship with Nicole Brown, all the way through L.A. and the race relations in L.A. as they were coming to a, you know, crescendo at that time.
Right.
So, and then once the murders actually finally take place, like, you are so hooked. I mean, it's unbelievable how well made it is. Our friend Josh just reminded us, by the way, about...
Going Clear. Yeah.
The Scientology documentary, which was actually an HBO documentary that then, I think, got a wider release and, like, sort of recognized. But still... really good documentary.
Yeah, I saw it like two or three times.
Yeah,
very excited.
It's absolutely. Josh, just talk on the mic, man. Talk on the mic. Here, I'll hold. Ladies and gentlemen, Josh Pape.
All right. Well, if these guys are you know the main characters from Pulp Fiction, I'm more like Quentin Tarantino sitting at the house. I have a small part to play, a little bit of an opinion, but I'm nowhere near as versed as these other two. So, yeah, I thought Scientology, for example, was a really one-sided documentary. However, extremely informative and successful.
Oh yeah, no, it was great. I love that movie. What was great about Going Clear was that nobody knew shit about Scientology. Like,
no.
I didn't know shit about Scientology.
No. It was frightening.
So it was one of these things like, yeah, I've always sort of wanted to know what that was about. And then you're watching it like, what the fuck?
I didn't realize that L. Ron Hubbard was such a creep. I totally understand why all those Dianetics commercials made my mom so pissed off.
When Tom Cruise is into this?
Holy shit. This thing is literally like 50 minutes away from where we live right now.
Because
It is in fucking Clearwater. So.
I sort of wish that I'd seen Going Clear before I saw The Master.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It would have made a lot more
sense. It would have made a lot more sense.
Perfect sense.
I should watch The Master again, probably.
Yeah. You know.
So anyway, O.J. Made in America, best documentary in many years. You should see it. It's as good as Going Clear, Josh.
All right.
You should watch. Well, now let me just add to your list of your litany of television shows. But if you've seen O.J. Made in America, you should probably watch American Crime Story: O.J. Simpson.
Yeah, I feel like you know everyone says it's good.
It's good.
And here's the problem with these two things being released right next to each other.
Yeah.
I keep telling people, hey, you gotta watch the O.J. thing, and they're like, yeah. And then like, a couple weeks later, I get an email from them. They're like, oh my god, it was so good. Cuba Gooding Jr. And I'm like, no,
the real one.
Yeah. Oh God, Schwimmer was so amazing.
Like, Courtney B. Vance, he's a really good actor.
No. I wanted you to watch the.
Let me tell you something. In as far as O.J. Made in America is concerned, of course, didn't I tell you? Of course, when he comes to Florida, all fucking hell breaks loose, and he just loses his goddamn mind.
Well, technically, he did murder his wife before he came to Florida. Allegedly.
That's right. We'll just keep with that. Speaking of Scientology, and speaking of Tom Cruise, because you did bring him up, and I do have Josh Baber in the house, I do want to mention that Jack Reacher 2 Never Go Back is going to be coming out this month.
Hell yeah.
And so, in the tradition of our show, The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com, in our new segment, finally! I finally saw Jack Reacher.
Oh, did you?
I did. And I have notes to prove it right here. For example, I don't know if you knew that Lee Child, the writer of the book, is actually in the movie.
Books? There's like 17 of them or something like that.
Yeah, and he's supposed to be what, like 6'5" in the books?
This huge hulking dude. Huge. So, it's going to be huge.
Huge.
No, so they finally decided they're going to make these movies after Lee Child's been writing them for 20 years or whatever it is, and all the fans are like, hooray! And they're like, yeah, and we're going to hire Tom Cruise. And they're like, yeah. They've been picturing, you know, like Liam Neeson with an extra 100 pounds on him, you know?
Yeah.
And then Tom Cruise gets in there.
Well, listen, I never saw it.
Doesn't matter, though.
I never saw it when it came out in the theater, honestly, because it looked, from the previews, it just looked boring. And I should have known better because
it also wasn't a good time for Tom Cruise. Like, he hadn't fully rebounded yet from the whole PR thing, you know?
Yeah,
couch jumping.
And actually, the premiere was delayed because of the Sandy Hook shooting. Oof. That same weekend, it was delayed a week.
God.
Yeah. But
timing.
I should have known better because it was directed by Christopher McQuarrie, who did The Way of the Gun, what the hell is the other one?
Usual Suspects.
Writer of. Yeah, and it's got a good cast. I mean, it's got Richard Jenkins, it's got Rosamund Pike, it's got David.
Richard Jenkins. I'm there, sight unseen.
Oyelowo. From Selma. Yeah, seriously, Richard Jenkins is great.
Richard Jenkins is so good.
Like, I saw this and Bone Tomahawk, like, back-to-back on the weekend, and Jesus Christ, that movie. I'm not going to talk about that this time.
Gotta see Flirting with Disaster.
Okay, so, but, yeah, really, really good. I would almost say that if this movie were to come out now, as opposed to Jason Bourne, like, this totally would have kicked Jason Bourne's ass.
It's got a little bit more of a sense of humor than Jason. Oh, you're talking about the most recent Jason Bourne.
Correct.
Oh, that's absolutely better than that piece of shit. But it definitely has a little bit more of a sense of humor than the Jason Bourne movies do.
Yeah, I mean,
he's a little bit more,
aware, self-aware.
A little bit more aware. The movies are a little bit more meta, like
a little more realistic and believable too, in my opinion.
Yeah, Jack Reacher is cool going to a bar and getting a beer. You know, like, Jason Bourne doesn't do that. Like, he's Jason, just, like, in his bathroom with a headache screaming, who am I? Like, you know.
Yeah, he's just, like, constantly, like, wrought with, like, self-doubt and, God, terrible.
Very tortured.
Terrible things. Meanwhile,
Reacher's getting a blowjob behind a bar, you know.
Seriously.
Dumpster,
like. His intro, super hot chick, is just putting her clothes on. He's just laying there, like, finding out about this guy that, you know, had this, like, shooting thing going on and everything else. Every woman in this movie was like,
oh, I know. I know, because all the dudes want to kick his ass, and he's just like, you know, sipping on a Miller Lite saying, you don't want to do that. You know, and I'm just like, he's so badass that, you know, how can you not want to blow him behind a dumpster?
Yeah, not only that.
I mean, not me.
Well, no, of course not. But it was really funny. Like, the sexual tension that Tom Cruise and Rosamund Pike kept having, like, the entire time. It's really, really funny.
Also, by the way, Werner Herzog in this movie. Is that in your notes?
Yes, it is.
How bizarre is that?
It is very bizarre.
And how amazing is that?
He's good. He's great, actually.
He's got that cold stare.
He's got no fingers either. Like, and he explains it, and it's even more terrifying. Like, yeah. I don't want to fight the three-fingered man.
He's got, like, a weird name, like the accountant. Or
the Zach.
Prisoner. That's what it is.
Yeah.
That's nowhere near the accountant.
Jai Courtney.
I got Ben Affleck on the brain.
Jai Courtney was actually really good, in spite of him not being good in most other things.
Yeah. Stop trying to make Jai Courtney happen.
Motherfucking car chase from, this was not, okay.
That's a good car chase.
Here, I'm going to let Josh explain, because we were talking about this before. Because explain to me your opinion about how other car chases are, you know, just kind of trite and, you know, like cookie cutter and by the book. And meanwhile, this one does like certain things, for example. So here.
Okay, well, I will say, just for example, that the railing back to the Jason Bourne movies for an idea. You know, like, I always get bothered by things like the fact that the car never breaks down. Yeah. Okay, like, you know, if you're going to make a movie that you're going to try and make it as believable and realistic as possible, you got to go to the full nine. You got to make problems. You know, a car is not going to magically drive downstairs, flip over three times, and then just drive off into the sunset. Right. I had a similar problem.
Bust your drive shaft in half, yeah, or something like that.
Yeah. Now Jack Reacher does really well here, because as soon as the car gets hit, it takes significant damage. You know, he gets knocked around on the road. It doesn't happen magically. Mistakes are made, and there's problems. But on the same time, it's a little hard to buy that there's three Camaros just sitting in front of a meth dealer's house.
Yeah.
Not to mention he gets one earlier from the shopping cart before.
It'd be Mustang.
He goes,
right?
There. Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah, you know, that was the only unbelievable part for me, is the fact that, you know, these cars are just always right there for his disposal. He's never driving, you know, like what would be in front of a meth dealer's, right, house, which is
never
a car with
Toyota Celica. Or
yeah.
Something.
Beige pickup truck from 1982, right, missing a hubcap. Right.
It's a beat-up MR2 or something like that, yeah.
But, again, the like, it just kept surprising me, like, how...
Like, Camaro again, right?
That's my biggest complaint, too. Like,
how fucking badass is this movie? Like, oh, you got an awesome car chase, he's kicking everybody's ass, he's telling everybody how he's going to kick everybody's ass, and then on top of everything else, they've got, like, the big 80s mano-a-mano showdown in the rain, of course,
yeah,
after he's done telling him on the phone, like, I'm going
to
beat you to death.
Jack,
hey, get that shit off my lawn.
And probably the best part about this movie is that you've got Robert Duvall saying suck it.
Yeah. Robert Duvall. I don't know if he's done doing, like, you know, main parts or whatever, but, like, I feel like every time I see him now, it's in, like, not even a supporting role. It's just like, I'm only gonna come in, I'm gonna do 2 days. You make of it what you will. Like,
I'll tell you what, if they had any savvy for Never Go Back, Jack Reacher 2, Never Go Back, Greyhound would be pimping the shit out of this, because Jack Reacher, public transportation advocate.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah.
So, by train or by plane, I will kick your ass.
The other thing that's good about Jack Reacher is kind of a mystery, too. It's not just an action. It's kind of, it's a little bit of a whodunit or how'd it get done kind of thing.
Yeah.
The whole shooting, and it sort of unravels as the movie goes on. You sort of are engaged in how it... And that... is, I'm sure, as a result of it coming from a Lee Child novel, mystery writer, you know, that kind of thing. You can't just... You write a book about a guy like that, it can't just be him knocking dudes out and getting blowies every fucking 5 minutes. You know, you gotta have some story. You gotta have some mystery and some suspense.
Yeah.
And this movie does. Like, it's got an interesting story.
He's the cop that's sitting at the desk whenever Jack Reacher gets bailed out by his attorney, when Jack Reacher's talking about, listen, there's three things that cops don't do. They don't drive Cadillacs, they don't drive personal cars, and they don't vote Democrat. And the guy's like, yeah, that's right. That's
very
absolutely
true.
Right.
Fraternal Order of Police endorsed Donald Trump.
Here is your shit. As we continue with the real thing on morelikeradio.com, I do know that there are a couple movies that were out on DVD, and Chris was able to watch them so that you can discern whether or not you actually want to invest your time in these movies or not. And so, Chris, tell the people what you saw.
Saw Neighbors 2. I love the first Neighbors movie. I thought it was so funny.
Well, Seth Rogen's funny in pretty much anything.
Seth Rogen, it's Nicholas Stoller, which is the same guy who wrote Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Right.
And the aforementioned Storks, that's in theaters, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Wrote the first Neighbors movie, and, Neighbors 2, not as good as Neighbors 1.
Okay.
But I laughed, you know, a hearty laugh, at least 7 or 8 times.
Yeah?
Which is good enough.
Okay.
Yeah. Definitely not as good as the first one, but also not a complete dud either. Like, you know, not Anchorman 2.
Okay. Now, if it were compared to the other project that Seth Rogen was in that you saw, Sausage Party, you know, way back in August,
yeah,
like, is it funnier on the same level?
Sausage Party was like 1 hour and 15 minutes of me smiling at the screen and then 15 minutes of me laughing hysterically with tears coming out of my eyes.
Damn, I still
gotta
watch that.
At the very end, the,
right,
like, sort of final moments of the movie.
Yeah.
This one is a little bit more even than that. It's got some funny stuff in it. Again, not as good as the first one, but funny enough that I didn't mind spending $3 or whatever it was at Redbox or On Demand or however the hell we got it.
As far as the new people that are introduced in this particular movie is Chloe Grace Moretz. Is she worth a damn? This movie?
Yeah, I mean, instead of a fraternity moving in next to them, this time it's a sorority. And how does it happen? Who gives a shit? It doesn't matter. It sort of happens in the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Right.
It's a little bit tough to buy Chloe Grace Moretz as a sort of a bad girl.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we all got to know her playing Hit Girl, but Hit Girl is kind of a, you know, first of all, she was 7 years old or whatever she was in that movie.
Pretty much.
I don't know. It's something about her. It's hard for me to buy her as this, like, crazy bad girl. Having said that, she gets some really good laughs, too. There's some good writing in it for her and the other chicks that are in the sorority with her. It is, I mean, it is the exact same premise as the first movie, except it's chicks instead of guys. But you do have Zac Efron sort of brought back into the fold, initially by the sorority, and then he sort of switches sides halfway through the movie and is trying to help out Rogan and his wife.
Rose Byrne.
Is so funny, by the way.
Like, she's really funny. Every time
I see her in anything.
She's funny in Bridesmaids.
Bridesmaids, The First Neighbors, and she's really funny in this one, too. Like, she needs to work more because she's freaking hysterical. But yeah, I mean, the movie's got plenty of laughs. Like, I did not regret watching it. I wasn't even drunk.
Okay. What was the other movie that you saw?
Saw The Shallows.
The Shallows.
With Blake Lively in a string bikini surfing and then getting, you know, sort of caught. Sort of a girl versus shark movie.
Now, I already know the answer to this question. Yeah. But I'm going to have to ask it anyway.
I did not masturbate.
Did you watch Gossip Girl at all when it was on the television, on the telly? No.
If you would have asked me 12 seconds ago what TV show Blake Lively was in, I would not have been able to tell you.
Okay.
No, I did not watch Gossip Girl.
Well, okay. Blake Lively, to me, seems like one of those people like Jai Courtney. Or what's the other guy that you were complaining about? Like, stop trying to make this guy happen. It's not going to happen.
I don't remember. Or, there's a bunch of those.
Yeah. You know, at one point it was Ryan Reynolds, and now he's, you know, he's taken off with Deadpool.
I feel like through my entire teen and 20s, it was Billy Crudup. Like, they were trying to make Billy Crudup happen. It was like, stop! It's never going to happen!
I mean, but she was
in... I don't care how good he was in Almost Famous.
But she was in The Town, and she was in Green Lantern and Savages and The Shallows. Yeah. But how is she in The Shallows? How is The Shallows in general?
She is good in it. Okay, so it's about a girl who's in, like, this beach in Mexico or whatever, and she's a surfer, and there's some more story there, but essentially the story is that it's a survival movie. Like, she is surfing and is sort of caught out in the water with a very large great white shark trying to eat her. And the thing about it is, it starts off very promising, and it starts off with the tension all the way through the movie, I have to say, is successful. They successfully build tension and make it sort of scary and you're concerned about her.
Nice. Okay.
Having said that, there's a lot of, oh, get the fuck out of here kind of moments. Like, and then you get right back to being concerned about her. And that's probably a credit to her as a performer, as an actress. She's very likable. Yeah. And I remember, although I didn't see the... what the fuck was it you just asked me about 35 seconds ago?
Gossip Girl.
Yeah. I never saw Gossip Girl.
Okay.
My first introduction to her was in The Town.
Yes.
Where she played the, like, super Boston, like, slutty Boston chick who's, like, you know, like, still in love with Ben Affleck and would do anything for him.
And, yeah, she's got, like, a neck tattoo and shit. She's smoking Camels.
That was my first introduction to her. And I was like, holy shit, this chick, you know, like I would have believed that she was just one of those, like, Boston chicks that he gets for his movies. And then see her on the red carpet, it's like, oh my god, that chick must be a really good actress because she was very convincing in that role.
Okay.
And I literally think that The Shallows was the next movie I saw her in, so I don't think I saw any of the other sort of stuff, The Age of Adeline or any of the other stuff that she was in.
And I
think it's a credit to her that the tension and the director, that the tension in the movie works. But literally every 5 minutes you're like, oh, fuck, oh, get the fuck, come on, no fucking way.
No fucking way.
Yeah. There's no fucking way!
I can't even see the shark!
Yeah. You know, so there's a lot of that kind of stuff. Is it an amazing movie? No, but...
Worth a rental?
I enjoyed watching it. As a rental, I thought that the director was you know, somewhat smart about the way he used the shark. There's a couple of moments where he's just like, I can't take any more, use the CGI, bleh! Like,
yeah,
you know?
Right.
And then you just get, like, lots of, like, big shots of the shark and stuff like that. But it is it successfully built tension. My wife was, like, very nervous and anxious through the entire thing.
Yeah.
Like, just squeezing a coffee mug to the point of breaking the handle, you know? Like, it was successful in that way.
The Shallows was made with $17 million as its budget, but made $116.
Holy crap.
Jaume Collet-Serra directed The Orphan. Did you see Orphan?
I did, and Orphan
pretty
was
good.
Another, like, you know,
pretty good.
Of, like, decent little horror movie. That's sort of what Shallows is. Yeah. Not a horror movie exactly, but...
It's a decent thriller.
Between that and Orphan, and I feel like he made a Liam Neeson movie or something like
Nonstop.
That. Yeah, Nonstop. Yeah. Nonstop is a good movie. Did you see Nonstop?
No.
Nonstop is one of those, like, you know... Late night cable in your underwear with a beer in your hand movies. That, like, you know, it's pretty good. You know, you watch it, you're like, this fucking thing's not so bad.
All
right. Ridiculous, but, and it's another one of those, just like Orphan, also, you know, lots of get the fuck out of here moments, you know.
As we were wrapping up on the real thing on morelikeradio.com, very briefly, the other movie that I saw, because it is October and it is my favorite time of year. I don't know if you like Halloween as much as I do, Chris.
Mm.
I watched another movie as part of our ongoing series. Finally! And that is Death Becomes Her.
You've never seen that?
Never.
We haven't
talked
about that.
Shame.
Yeah.
I went to the theater and saw that.
Holy shit.
I think I still have my ticket.
Do you really?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I'm uber nerd.
Because apparently this was the movie that was made after Back to the Future Part 3 and right before Forrest Gump.
Yeah, also Bruce Willis sort of at the height of his power, too.
Was it?
Yeah. Yeah, 93, wasn't that it? Was it 93?
Just after the
92.
It's like right around, like very much at the height of his power.
Striking Distance, Bruce Willis.
Yeah, this was before he got into the weird shit like Striking Distance. Like, I mean, this was right around the same time, but this is coming off Die Hard, Die Hard 2. It's before Die Hard 3. Last Boy Scout was right in there. Like,
yeah.
Bruce Willis was a mega fucking star at this time. And so was Goldie Hawn, and so was Meryl Streep.
And screenplay by David Koepp.
Yep.
And I didn't realize that apparently I didn't pick this out. Tina picked this out. Hey, Alan Silvestri did the music for this. Like, Alan Silvestri, who the hell is that? And of course, Alan Silvestri also did Who Framed Roger Rabbit because she does a Jessica Rabbit bit for her burlesque shows and everything.
Yeah, another Zemeckis movie too.
Yeah, this movie to me was basically like an hour and a half Tales from the Crypt episode.
Yeah, that's what it was for everybody. I remember even seeing it as a 13-year-old or whatever it was and being like, man, it was all right. You know, and when you're 13, you go to the movies, everything's good. And I remember thinking, like, yeah, you know, okay.
Yeah.
What else you got?
It was all right. I mean, for better or worse, like, there's 90s style all around. I think that, you know, Bruce Willis was channeling his best Gene Wilder, like, manic, like, energy impression, like, going on towards the end.
I like Willis in that mode. I always like Willis when he's a little bit of a loser. And he's a little bit of a loser. Like, he's this best. Like, you think about all of his really great parts, whether it's Fifth Element, or Die Hard, Last Boy Scout.
Shit, Pulp Fiction,
12 Monkeys, Pulp Fiction. He's always a little bit of a loser.
Yeah.
It was the times when he tried to not do that, i.e. the later Die Hard movies, or any of these other kind of things that he made, when he was trying to be too badass, it doesn't work. He's got to be a little bit of a loser. Definitely a little bit of a loser in that.
Would Looper be counted in that? It's kind of a loser in that. Wouldn't that?
I guess he is.
Yeah.
I am not in the category of people that worships Looper.
No?
No.
I liked it. I mean,
it's all right. I remember liking it. Yeah. And I think I saw it only once. But I do remember liking it.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that Meryl Streep and Isabella Rossellini and Goldie Hawn were all going to be in this, and they were all going to be, you know, pretty good as far as, like, horror comedy is concerned.
Yeah, all the main actors in the movie are, you know, very, very good. The movie doesn't work because, as you were sort of saying, it's like basically a Tales from the Crypt episode, you know, expanded into an hour and a half, and that just doesn't work. As Bilbo says, you know, too little butter spread out over, you know, too much bread.
Scraped
over too much bread. Thank
Shame.
You. Yeah. No, but that's what it is. Yeah. Like, it's not enough story for an hour and a half or 2 hours or whatever it is.
Yeah, it could have been cut down to an hour.
I haven't seen it in years. How do the effects hold up?
Well, it won best visual effects.
Yeah, a lot of shit did. If we go back and look at that stuff, it's not always so great.
What did it beat?
In 92?
Technically 93.
93?
The Academy Awards.
Don't tell me it beat... Oh, no, the awards were held in 93, but correct. It was, all the movies were from 92.
Correct.
Oh, shit, I don't know. What did it beat?
Batman Returns.
Okay, fine. Well, what's it take to put a rubber nose on DeVito? Like,
Alien 3.
Alien 3. Ugh, I'm not so happy about that one, but yeah. History remembers Alien 3 a lot kinder than it was at the time.
Like, the latex and like the practical effects were impressive. The CGI from 1996 backwards, not good. So yeah. I mean, that's just with any movie, or not every movie, but most movies.
The CGI,
yeah,
it's weird though. The original Jurassic Park holds up better than most CGI since then.
That's
you know what I mean?
It's because you got money, man. You got money. And speaking of,
sounded like Chris Tucker just then.
And speaking of death, the very last thing that we will talk about.
Speaking of death,
as we wrap up, it's your favorite segment.
Oh,
Chris,
significant death.
We lost not someone but something, and that is the Cheap Theater in Lakeland, Florida. Palm Cinema 3, after 3 decades. Is no more. No more Mugs and Movies, Chris.
It hurts.
That's shame.
Fucking shitty. You know.
Need a bell.
I saw
the Dollar Theater. Everybody's got every town has got a theater that they just call it the Dollar Theater. Right. And we'll go over to the Dollar Theater. Yeah, it's not even a dollar anymore, it's $3 or whatever it was. But still.
Yeah. What was the first movie you saw there?
Oh God. I don't even remember the first movie I saw there. You're in this town long enough to remember before AMC was there.
Right.
AMC's not even there anymore. But yeah. I remember before AMC was there, we had Palm Cinema.
Yeah. Lakeland Square 10?
No. It was 2.
Oh, wait. They had the theater before they expanded Walmart.
Right.
There was a theater on...
By Zares.
Like, correct. Yeah. I saw an American Zares. Tale 2.
I saw Willow there.
Oh, shit.
Clearly you made the better choice because I saw Fievel Goes West.
Oof.
So.
Palm Cinema, I saw Lethal Weapon there.
Oh, shit.
Palm Cinema, you might remember Paramount had an issue with a lot of the large theaters in the country in 1994, so Paramount movies weren't released in AMC theaters, and therefore Forrest Gump was not played at AMC theaters.
I do remember that. Holy
shit. Anyone in Lakeland that saw Forrest Gump in the theater probably saw it at Palm Cinema. And I remember it being weird because everybody was there for an opening night at the Dollar Theater because Paramount had this weird issue with AMC theaters at that time.
I saw Pulp Fiction there.
Did you?
Yeah.
I saw a ton of good movies. Another thing we did there quite a few times was watch Monday Night Football.
Fuck yeah.
They used to play Monday Night Football there free. You could just go in because they had Mugs and Movies, by the way, we should say. Which, by the way, you could smoke in there when we were in high school. Yes, all the way up until like 2000 or so you could smoke in there.
$5 pitchers, $1 hot dogs.
Those sweet-ass leather, like, captain chairs that, like, you know, like swivel around.
Seat 5 to a table, uncomfortably. Well, I mean, not uncomfortably, but they're just, like, very awkward. You're just kind of, like, sinking in while you're screaming at the screen because you're watching, you know, this team or that team winning or losing.
And you could get food. It's always that weird thing when you're in the movie theater and you're, like, trying, like, you really want to order, but you also don't want to be too loud. You're like, nachos! Nachos! No jalapeno! No jalapeno!
Shit, the last movie I saw there was Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
Aww.
Yeah. So, what the fuck? Palm Cinema's gone. Isn't that kind of ironic?
It's really shitty. Brian Adams posted a picture online with U-Haul trucks in front of the place.
Yeah, and I don't know. Listen, if someone could reopen it up, right? I mean, they could just, you know...
I don't know the details, like...
Because what I read, according to the Ledger, was saying that they continue to have issues with the roof. And fixing the roof was, you know,
more trouble than it was worth.
Correct.
It was one of these places that was like being kept open, you know, probably without a profit for quite a long time.
Yeah.
You know, sort of a labor of love. It's one of those things like, damn, wish I had gone there more often now, you know? But I remember going there quite a bit as a kid. They used to have the marquee in front that, like, you know, it was like three-sided marquee in front, you know, with the posters.
Yeah.
I'm going to miss that place, man. I also got arrested there. It should be me.
Me too.
Along with Baber, who's sitting beside me.
Ah, yeah. Josh, what the hell? What'd you do?
Nothing.
Nothing, allegedly.
Adjudication withheld.
It's all alleged.
You're 17.
It's a long story.
Yeah. Oh, well. For another time.
What movie were we going to see that night before we got arrested?
Well, we were going to watch an employee preview. We were not going to see
a movie at Palm Cinema.
We were going to watch an employee preview at AMC, and then, you know, someone had the right idea to go. God, no idea. Well, we didn't see it, so. Damn it.
Really?
That would have been an awesome movie to see.
Richards fan? Nev Campbell fan?
Kevin Bacon's Bacon.
Been a really good movie to see, allegedly.
Matt Dillon's Dingle.
Is it Bacon or Dillon that showed off the
Bacon
balls? It was Bacon.
And he's got the half.
Fucking Bill Murray,
cheating,
for God's sake.
Bill Murray is in it. Did you see that movie again? I remember.
Bill Murray's the only good thing about it.
That'll be my.
John McNaughton directed that, by the way.
That's right. That'll be my late night in my underwear drinking a beer.
Hell yeah. Totally that kind of movie.
We thank you for your patronage. We will leave you in the spirit of Luke Cage. We will leave you with Old Dirty Bastard's Shimmy Shimmy Ya, because I want to hear loud rap music, and you should too. So, follow us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook. We are The Real Thing, TheRealThingMLR. I have no idea. I remember a lot of stupid crap. It's just, it filled with my
head. Why'd you do that shit? So I'd be like, it's The Real Thing, TheReal. Fuck.
Chris Wetton, thank you.
Thank you.
Josh Baber, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
My name is Mark Nixon. Enjoy the rest of your week. We will talk to you. Cats all around. Nerves get hard. Quick cement to the ground. For an EMC and any 52 states, I get psycho. Killer, Norman Bain. My producer slam. My flow is like, bam. Jump on stage, I've been a dip. That shit is bam. Ooh, baby, I like it, bro. Yeah, baby, I like it, bro. My name is the ODB, and I'll beat your ass. For the ladies who know me, tell them who the fuck I be. For the niggas who know me, tell them who the fuck I be. My style comes down on y'all like rock. Sitting on the dock of the bay. By the dock. I'm by the flock. Don't go. By the break, by the block. Got East Coast locked down, padlock. My Zoo niggas be all on down by the flock.
Can I get the Wu-Tang? Wu-Tang! Wu-Tang!